Blog Talk Radio.
You know what gang violence is? Mostly, and the people don't want you to hear this, somebody shoots your family member. So of course you retaliate. You know what I mean? Same thing the U.S. does, except nobody even shot their family members. You know, somebody bombed a school and all these people get killed, so the United States feel like, ooh, that's messed up, we gotta go show them who's the real killer. This country was built on gangs. You know, I think this country still is run on gangs. Republicans, Democrats, the police department, the FBI, the CIA, those are gangs. You know what I mean? The correctional officers. I had a correctional officer tell me straight up, we the biggest gang in New York State. Straight up.
This is the revolution, introducing drugs all crap to us ghetto teens. Got along for poor niggas now. Play of what it be like. When will niggas see they got us leading with three strikes? Can't seem to focus, hopeless. With violent thoughts, I'm hopeless. Got the devil petrified. Hot from my heart to focus. And so I learn to earn my currency in overtime. Affiliated, clearly click a military mind. May God forgive us, so we dwell inside of paradise. Thugged out and drug dealing from the womb to the block. My live mind got me surviving five rounds. My 45 got me fortified with live rounds. When shit dick, we block hit. When I block stick, all hell, I don't bail. Wrath, that's apocalypse. Forever ghetto necessary, picture food stamps. Outlaw thug niggas never left the food stamps.
We got a real live shit from front to back. To my niggas in the world who block to die. From my soldiers to die, from my soldiers to die. When I fuck my soldiers to die, from my soldiers to die. We got the real live shit from front to back. To my niggas in the world who block to die. From my soldiers to die. From my soldiers to death, where the fuck my soldiers
at?
From my soldiers to death.
Now I was born as a rebel, making trouble for the devil. Take this gangbang shit to a whole nother level. Can you feel me now? Armies in every city, definition of power. Players, you can see the war is the prophecy. Survival is the strategy. Rest in peace to my comrades, that's the seat. Organize the streets of time, yeah. Any devil petrified of a nigga in his right mind. They tell us that we hopeless and hellbound. It's for the brothers and penitentiary jail bam. I got you in my heart till the day I die. Think of the damage we could do if we wasn't high. Can you picture me low? It's the thug rap. Political contracts and bloodbath. From a Tulsa core up in the rockets, though they got you. I never let them stop me. The struggle continues.
Now, if we do want to live a thug life and a gangster life and all of that, okay. So stop being cowards and let's have a revolution. But we don't want to do that. Dudes just want to live a character. They want to be cartoons. But if they really wanted to do something that was that tough, all right, let's start our own country. Let's start a revolution. Let's get out of here. Let's do something.
Real live shit from front to back. To my niggas in the world who rock to rap. Where my soldiers are at? Where my soldiers are at? Where the fuck my soldiers at? Where my soldiers are at? We got the real live shit from front to back. To my niggas in the world who rock to rap. Where my soldiers are at? Where my soldiers are at? Where the fuck my soldiers at? Where my soldiers are at? Come on.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer, right?
Yes.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over!
Mr. Jackson, sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see to that. Get him where it hurts.
Starring Gary Dorden from TV CSI.
This is the military, David.
Free your land. Revolutionary greetings.
Welcome to another edition of Georgia University Radio. I'm your host, Bumani Shakir, where our goals are fivefold. Our first goal is to eradicate functional literacy among new African prisoners, and we can do that through education. Two, our second goal is to eradicate cultural ignorance among new African prisoners. Our third goal, transforming criminal mentality to the new African mentality. Our fourth goal, to assist in the rebuilding and stabilization of new African communities. Whereas our fifth goal is prepare a new African prisoner for release, reducing new African recidivism. Before I bring in the guests, now I'll go with a couple of events that happened in history during this week. On July the 10th, 1775, Horatio Gates, George Washington, Adjutant General, issued an order excluding blacks from Continental Army. In 1875, Mary McLeod Bethune, educator and civil rights leader, was born in Maysville, South Carolina. She is the founder of the Bethune-Cookman College. In 1941, Ferdinand, known as Jelly Roll Morton, pioneer jazz pianist and composer, died in Los Angeles at the age of 56. In 1962, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was arrested during a demonstration in Albany, Georgia. In 1972, Democratic Convention opened in Miami Beach, Florida. Blacks constituted 15% of the delegates. The convention nominated Senator George S. McGovern for president. Representative Shirley Chisholm received $151.95 of 2,000 plus ballots on the first roll call for president. She was the first black woman to run for president. In 1991, President Bush unilaterally lifted the U.S. trade and investment sanctions against South Africa. Sanctions had been imposed by Congress to pressure the South African government to abandon apartheid. And lifting the sanctions, President Bush said the white South African government had made encouraging moves and direction. Top Democratic leaders and Congress and black leaders criticized the move, citing a large number of black political prisoners and denial of the vote to black South Africans. On July 11th through the 13th in 1905, black intellectuals and activists organized Niagara Movement at a meeting in Niagara Falls. Delegates from 14 states, led by Dr. W. Du Bois and William Monroe Trotter, demanded abolition of all distinctions based on race. In 2000, Reverend Vashanti Murphy McKenzie elected the first woman bishop of the AME Church at a quadrennial Cincinnati. In 2009, Kimberly Anayadiki returns home at 16 years old, and she is the youngest African-American female to pilot a plane across the country from California to Virginia. She was in pilot training since age 12. On July the 12th, Emmett J. McHenry wrote the first Common Cold, born in 1943. In 1951, Governor Al Day Stevenson called out National Guard to stop rioting in Cicero, Illinois, where a white mob of 3,500 tried to keep a black family from moving into the all-white city. In 1963, National Guard troops imposed limited martial law in Cambridge, Maryland after open confrontation between demonstrators and white segregationists. On 1966, from the 12th through the 15th, a race riot on the west side of Chicago, National Guard mobilized. In 1967, black rebellion in New Rock, New Jersey, protesting against unjust social and economic conditions. It lasted from the 12th through the 17th. In 1980, John W. Davis, former president of National Urban League, critically injured in an attempted assassination in Fort Wayne, Indiana. On July 13th through the 16th, in 1863, hostility to draft and fear of blacks, the cause of the war, and potential competitors in the labor market led to New York draft riots, one of the bloodiest race riots in American history. White terrorists swept through the streets, murdering blacks and hanging them from lampposts. More than 1,000 were killed or wounded. In 1868, Oscar L. Dunn, a former slave, formally installed as Lieutenant Governor of Louisiana, the highest elected office held to that date by an African American. Antoine Dubuclay, state treasurer. In 1919, race riots in Longview and Gregg counties, Texas, martial law was declared. In 1948, Bob Balazs and Lee were born. He's a former political prisoner, a long actor involved in the African independent movement, a musician, a storyteller, a griot, and an overall historian. In 1972, the Bureau of Census report said unemployment averaged 9.9% in 1971, compared with a 5.4% rate for whites. Report also said that 31.8% of all black families were headed by a woman, an increase from 28% reported in 1970. On July 14, 1864, General A.G. Smith, with 14,000 men, including a brigade of black troops, defeated Nathan B. Forrest at Harrisburg near Tupelo, Mississippi. You know, that's before I want to start the Klan. Okay. In 1891, John Steiner awarded patent for refrigerator. In 1950, Bob Watanabe Tayemba was born. Bob Watanabe Tayemba, one of the co-founders of NAPO, New York People Organization, a co-founder of Malcolm X grassroots movement, former political prisoner. He co-founded a new African martial arts system. He's an author, an investigator, and so much more. In July 15, 1869, A.J. Haynes, black captain of the Arkansas militia, assassinated in Marion, Arkansas. In 1898, the National African American Council, founded in Rochester, New York, Bishop Alexander Walters of the AME Zion Church, was elected president of the organization, proposed a program of assertion and protest. In 1948, Alabama and Mississippi Democrats voted the Democratic Convention after adoption of a strong civil rights plank. On July 17, the so-called Dixiecrats, Democrats, opposed to integration and civil rights, met in Birmingham and nominated South Carolina Governor J. Strong Thurmond for president. In 2010, Madeline Buck paroled. Madeline Buck was an honorary member of the Black Liberation Army. Okay, July 16, 1861. President Lincoln asked the General-in-Chief to let slave masters bring back those fugitive slaves who had crossed the Potomac with Union troops. Following his ecstasy desire, the Department of Washington on July 17 excluded fugitive slaves from quarters and camps of the Union Army and barred them from accompanying troops on the march. In 1862, Ida B. Wells Barnum was born. She was a civil rights activist and organizer. In 1947, Mama Asai Shakir was born. Former political prisoner, she's currently a political exile. Little Rock County average citizen who's been doing the work for years. Those are a couple of events that happened in history during this week. Thank everybody who's been following our broadcast in 2014. Thank everybody who's been educating the community and doing the work in particular. I want to send a shout out to all the political prisoners and prisoner of wars who are currently doing the work, creating designs, materials, study groups, and having an override effect on the community and inside as well as people on the streets. You know, it's a long resistance, you know, and free all Captain New African citizens, Captain New African political prisoners, New African POWs. You know, I'd like to welcome to the show tonight, Baba, Dr. Kwame, Asajifo Kalamara. Free Land, how you doing, Bob?
Freeland, I'm thankful for my personal ancestors and our collective ancestors and my elders for being present to be able to be a participant in our new African independence movement. So I'm doing well, and I'm trying to make certain that I maintain wellness, because we know that we are and have been in a protracted New African People's War. So I think laying that as a context for talking about the Camp Mzikwa, in which I'm currently located with a number of youth nationally who are participating in our program. So I'm doing quite well, thank you.
Okay, I appreciate it, Bob. But once again, it's always a pleasure to speak with you, and it's a pleasure to have you on the broadcast. I want to thank you for the work you did in the past, the present, and work you're doing in the future currently. Now, before we get into the conversation, tell people a little bit about your background, who you are, you know, so we can get an understanding of where you're coming from.
Okay, well, before I do that, I should say to the audience that I appreciate you sharing that chronology of our experiences within the U.S. empire. But I would like to also share, you mentioned my Rafiki Askari and co-founder, Baba Watani Taimba. I would be remiss if I did not share that my wife, Ia Shango Kalimara, was also born on July the 14th. So her and Watani both share the same birthday. I would also add, you mentioned that about Asada Shakur. I would make one qualification, and that's something that she might even quibble with just based on some legality issues, but I would argue and have argued that she is was a prisoner of war, because we do know, we do acknowledge that the FBI had considered her to be the soul of the Black Liberation Army. We know that the Black Liberation Army was a clandestine force that was established to fight police brutality, racism, white supremacy, patriarchy, and all of the other things that we know to be oppression and exploitation. So all I'm saying is that I would argue that she is legitimately classified as a prisoner of war. You also mentioned on the 16th of July, you mentioned about Ida B. Wells Barnett's birthday. And we know that she was a human rights activist. She was a sister who believed in women's rights. We know that in that belief, she was not deterred from Susan B. Anthony or any of the white feminists to derail her from her African or Black agenda, as well as being a mother of children and a spouse to a husband. But having said that, and we know her history, I mean, you know, being an anti-lynching advocate as she was, and had to leave Memphis to go to Chicago based on threats of her life. But the point I wanted to make is, and this is something that too often is unrecognized, and if I use this as a colloquialism, understand the vibration. I argue that she was a pistol-packing mama. And if you read some of her work, she talks about how proudly she had a Winchester rifle. So I'm saying that we need to, given where we are, we need to put everything within historical context. The next thing that on July the 16th that I don't want to get overlooked, even though I can't remember, I'll be honest, I can't remember the year, but this was the sunset of Baba Dr. John Henry Clark, who is actually buried in Columbus, Georgia. And I and a number of other people were part of the Saka Sum Sum that buried, did the ritual of burying Dr. John Henry Clark. And like I said, Columbus, Georgia, that's where he wasn't born in Georgia. He was from Alabama, but I'm saying that is his resting place. So I thought it would be important just to make that illumination. I thought it would be also just relevant just to share with you and the audience. Now, having said that, you asked the question about who I am. Well, I've been involved in the New African independence movement since the late 1960s. My first interaction with the New African independence movement and specifically the provisional government of New Africa was in 1969 in San Francisco, California. And I was introduced to the formation through the owners of Marcus Bookstore, there's Ray and Julian Richardson, who were faculty at San Francisco State College, which would eventually become San Francisco State University. And some folks may recall that in 1968, there was the San Francisco State College strike, where we founded the first Black Studies and Ethnic Studies program on a predominantly white institution, if you will. And I would have to say that San Francisco State, you know, really produced a lot of powerhouses. That's not to say that Merritt College, which, you know, we know about Huey P. Newton and a number of other people, but I'm just saying that State put out a lot of folks. I mean, George Murray, the same Coltrane, Jim Moringa, and believe it or not, Danny Glover was a part of the movement. The actor Danny Glover was part of the movement on the campus of San Francisco State University. We know that people like Baba Dr. Obed Tshaka, who did a lot of work with the African Liberation Day programs in the Bay Area, at one point was faculty of the San Francisco State University. There, Theo Obenga, who is a Congolese brother who some people who study African history real deep would probably recognize that he was the partner or one of Dr. Sheikh Anas Diop's tutors, if you will, in the study of Kemetic peoples, what some people call ancient Egyptians. And it was in 1974 where he and Theo Benga took on, I believe, if my memory serves me correct, about 12 of Europeans' best so-called Egyptologists and Orientalists to prove that the dynastic period of ancient Kemet were black folk who had melanin in our bodies just like you and I and our listening audience. What I'm saying is that in some respects, I am a product of San Francisco State University, clearly a product of Marcus Bookstore, because Drs. Ray and Julian Richardson, I consider to be my, quote, black nationalist parents. Unfortunately, Marcus Bookstore no longer services California, but it does service Oakland. And I think that's important because we know based on the era of the internet and technology, folks will buy a book from Amazon quicker than going to a bookstore. And we sometimes don't realize the value of the physical text and going through it and using your yellow highlighter and using your ink pen in terms of making notes and even questioning some of the information within the books or adding your own commentary so it will enable you to be able to share what might seem to be a complex issue and make it simple and plain for those of us who are less acclimated to political science or just, you know, so-called, so hear me, I said so-called high education. And what I mean by so-called, I think it's important for us to recognize that we should remain humble and recognize people can have all the degrees that they want. Sure, I got some degrees too, but be very clear. I learned from everybody. I learned from the child. I learned from the adolescent. I learned from young people. I learned from my peer group and those people who are elder to me. One of the things I should say is that I do have taught in law schools and colleges and universities. One of the things I want to make that point is to say is that I have found that in terms of razor-sharp political and theoretical analysis, I found people sharper in the barbershops and in the beauty shops than in the academy. I'm going to repeat this. I have found people in the barbershops and the beauty shops being sharper in terms of their analysis and insight even to leadership and personalities than people in the academy. You know, and that's the thing I think is important for us to understand, that we have to understand that, like I said, knowledge is wherever we may find it, and we should not shut that out because of an inflated ego. And an inflated ego is the enemy of our people, because what it does is that puts a wedge between us and the future Rafiki Askari or comradeship that we need to be able to create critical mass to turn this not only the empire around in terms of its dissipation, if you will, its dismantlement, if you will, but also we have to understand that white supremacy and patriarchy is a global domination system that must be destroyed. So our, for lack of a term, leadership should be clearly recognizing gender and age and everything else. What I mean that by that, in short, I'm saying we have to have a intergenerational struggle. That is to say that we can't make the same mistakes that folks made in the 60s. You know, we know that most of us are aware of the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, which eventually becomes the Black Panther Party, even though we don't realize that there were Black Panther parties before Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seale created that program in October of 1966. But my point is that there were other revolutionary formations in the 1960s, everything from RAM, Revolutionary Action Group, to African Blood Brotherhood. I mean, the point is, I can go on and even make some mistakes about naming some organizations, but my point is that we need to have a broader understanding of our people's participation in our people's struggle. So getting back to the lesson of the Black Panther Party, I have argued, and I think the reading of Salah Shakur's autobiography clearly gives some insight, because he does not exude this ego that some of the other writers of the movement has exhibited in their writings and in their communication. Basically, to make a long story short, one of the lessons of COINTELPRO is this, and the weakness of the Black Panther Party, and that is it was young leadership. When I say young, I'm talking about 16, 18, 19, 20, 22, 23, 24, and they did not connect with the elders of the movement who had some experience. And as a result of that, and they're growing so big and fast, the doors of vulnerability opened up in terms of FBI in infiltration. And so in a word, what I'm trying to say is, at least going back to the issue of leadership, we have to recognize that COINTELPRO talked about the rise of the Black Messiah and charismatic leadership, things of that nature. And all I'm saying is to say is that that made it easier for movement disruption in these organizations, whether it's Malcolm's Organization of African-American Unity or Movement Mosque Incorporated or SCLC. I mean, obviously SCLC still exists. I'm uncertain about Muslim Mosque Incorporated, but I am certain that there are still remnants of the Organization of Afro-American Unity. My point is that once they assassinated the leader, if you will, then the vacuum that was created a disruption, and it weakened the strength of the organization. So I've been a long advocate of AIC, means that we also recognize that women should be leaders and co-leaders as well, but also, like I was sharing earlier, we need an intergenerational, which means we need elders, folks who are old, and folks who are young, youth, so that we can integrate the ideas and strategies. So me as an elder, I got to be very honest. I don't know the technology like some of your listening audience. I got to rely on somebody who's really up on the game to be able to communicate that which I need. Sure, I can go ahead and reference a book or even go back to my personal experiences and be able to relate to something. I mean, some of my personal experiences, well, let me just say that we talked about George Jackson University, which, you know, I'm, you know, pleased and honored to be a part of. You know, I've been in jail. I mean, I didn't spend no big time, but what I'm at all, but what I'm trying to say is, it's all been based on, you know, contradictions with the police, because I'm on the trenches. There's been stuff that I've done that I really couldn't talk about. You know, all I'm saying is I do have a perspective of the an experience of the various dimensions, but I'm a public revolutionary, if you will. Going back to obviously what you asked Baba Mani, and that was, you know, a little bit of who I am. I mean, so obviously I mentioned that I was a part of San Francisco State University. I was a part of the University of San Francisco. I had a regional Heber Smith Community Lawyer Fellowship, which meant I also have been to law school. I've also been to an African theological institution. I have, as I mentioned, I've taught at varying levels, everything including high school and elementary school. I have done drug rehabilitation work. I've done death penalty mitigation work, trying to get brothers off death row. I used to work for a prison library system when I lived in the state of Illinois. I have literally been part of a legal team for the Pontiac Brothers case in Pontiac, Illinois. I believe the year was 1978, where they wanted to initially try 17 black men on a capital case, but eventually one of them flipped as a snitch, so it was 16. And we won all the cases, meaning we won, I believe, the first six, and they decided not to prosecute the 10. But when we met, our legal meetings was right next to the electric chair. I worked for, like I said, a library system. I worked there until, you know, working, establishing a African history program and a paralegal program.
You know, you said you're going to be on the aisle. We got like 26 minutes left. I want to get into the aspect of the New African Scouts Campus Eco, right? You know, because you got a lot of history to tell, right?
Okay, well, I'm glad you slowed me down. You asked me a question, and I went off to try to be as complete as possible. So I'm glad
It's all good, man. I've enjoyed it. It's all good to know exactly where we're going. That's a lot of rich history. But can you tell us, when was New Average Scout founded and where and why? What's the reason for the founding New Average Scout? What's the purpose of it?
What I want to say is I was not a part of the New Average Scout organization when it was founded in Los Angeles in 1978. But what I can say is I am a founder of the National Camp, Camp Onzico, which was founded in 1994. It was founded by Mama Sister Zenobia Muhammad, who resides in Birmingham, Alabama. The other co-founder was Baba Ahmed Obafemi, who was her husband at that time, and it was living in Alabama. And I was a part of the New African Scout Organization in the Atlanta chapter. They met with me in 1993. Because I was able to get Atlanta on board with the camping experiences, because I have a long history of being a Boy Scout of America, Eagle Scout, Order of the Arrow, a lot of skill building. I think it's important for us to recognize Boy Scouts of America and Girl Scouts of America are paramilitary organizations designed to get those folks involved in U.S. military. So with the New African Scouts, it's about being a part of a above-ground military complex, if you will, or formation to serve the needs of New African people in whatever cities that we reside in within the U.S. empire. We decided that this national camp would be able to address training survival skills, which also have urban application. Our first camp, we camped various places. We camped in various sites in Alabama, various sites in Mississippi, and more sites in Georgia, primarily because of the facilities or amenities. So right now we're using FDR Park, which is near Callaway Gardens or near Columbus, Georgia, in Pine Mountain. Pine Mountain has 21 miles of the best-kept hiking trails in the entire state. And I've taken people who we've literally hiked the entire 21. Right now, today, as we're speaking on the air, we got one of our older group, our New African Panthers, who are on an overnight hiking survival training right now as we speak, meaning they're going, and it's, the weather is very inclement. It's been raining, it's been hot, and they got to deal with it. What they have to do is once they set up their base camp after hiking about maybe 15 miles, they got to do an area of operation, make certain to find the best places to set up temporary shelter. They've got some tarps and some paracord and some other things to be able to do that. And be very clear, every campsite doesn't have the same amount of trees. They're not trimmed. All I'm saying is they got to figure all this out. The water has to be purified. Hear me. Water has to be purified. They just can't drink it out of the river. So they got to boil it or use any of the other skill sets that they're trained in terms of water purification. They have to build a fire. They got to know how to use a hatchet, an axe. They have to use a pickaxe, or they got to build a latrine. Hear me. Ain't no toilets or outhouses on these trails, so they got to do all that. They also have to set up their security. Because it's a state park don't mean you don't have crazy predators or anything else like that running around that may be in the park. They have carried their sleeping bags or their sleeping gear. They've carried their water bottle. They've carried their compasses. They've carried their maps so they can understand how to negotiate getting to their base camp and how to negotiate getting to their extraction site. Well, also, like I said, they got to eat. They got to set up a fire, you know, in wet conditions. The food that they have are a food stuff that, you know, I can't say for certain what they have, but what we have done in the past is corn on the cob, and you bake it. You bake the your potatoes. You bake your apple for your dessert. But the protein is TVP, textured vegetable protein, which means you got to hydrate it, which means you got to have purified water and add the spices and cook it however you want to do it. You got to cook it that way. And be very clear, there's a practical application in terms of why there is a dehydrated protein. It's about the issue of weight. And black folks have been, African folks are the first world ecologists, and this is something we emphasize, and that is when we go into a site, we make certain it's clean better than we found it. So what they got to do is they've got to cook the food, obviously, hydrate it and things of that nature. But after all is done, you got to clean up. If you got trash that has not been burned or buried, you got to carry it out. You know, so you got to be conscious in terms of weight. And I said before, too, this is co-ed, or I maybe didn't make it that clear. We got sisters and brothers. And sisters, for the most part, over the last few years, have outshined the brothers in terms of leadership and skill, demonstration of skills that they have learned throughout the years. We're going to have another group that will be going out tomorrow on a much shorter hike because they're younger. This group that I'm talking about today is age 14 through 17. The group that's going out tomorrow is going to be 10 through 13. Yesterday, we had the 6-year-olds through the 9-year-olds go out. And obviously, you know, we're talking about, you know, real young babies, so we didn't take them on a long, long, long hike. They probably hit 3 miles, some of the skill building, everything from first aid or whatever. We taught them in different strategies, but I do want to say this, you know, and I'm sharing something, an appreciation, that we put all of our young people, our New African Scouts and Camp Women's Eagle participants, on security. You know, so we have a 6-, 7-, 8-year-old who are on post, walking post and stationary post with a young adult or a, quote, classified adult who's imparting some of the things that we need to know in terms of why would you need to be in the dark so nobody can see you? Why would you need to be in light where someone can see you? What do you do if someone is coming into your space? How do you need to dialogue? All I'm saying is that we try to be as complete as possible and be as thorough. And each year, as the scouts continue to come back to Camp Lomzico, they're adding more and more to their skill sets, as well as our counselors. And what I can say is our current leadership for Camp Lomzico were 6, 7, and 8 when we started the camp. So all I'm saying is we have another generation of leadership.
That's a beautiful thing. You know, you had mentioned the different ages, and you had mentioned different terms like the counselor. What's the understanding in regard to the age? You said 6 through 12, 13 to 17. What are the individuals actually called?
Well,
you know, in regards to their name
our
recognition.
Our 6 to 7 year olds are our pockets. We got all cat family. Our pockets. Our chewies are 8 and 9. And let's see, let me make it certain about that. Yeah, 8, 9, and 10. 11 and 12 are our Simbas, and our 13 through 17 are our New African Panthers. Our Panthers are considered to be our rites of passage program. And like I said before, as terms of, I mean, we do some of the things that most African-centered rites of passage do, but they're engaged in the politics of who we are. So they know who Asala Shakur is, Nahanda Abiodun. They know who Matula Shakur is, Kamal Siddiqui, Imam Jamil Alameen. We can go on and on. They know who these people are, and they write letters and support and sometimes contribute to commissary. They know about, you know, the history, you know, about the, you know, New African Independence Movement, its Revolutionary Action Movement. They know about Mabel and Robert Williams. We can go on and on. You know, they know about, in the provisional government, they know about Raphael. I can't think of what Raphael's last name is, but they also know about Yuri Kochiyama. And I mention them because we're talking about a Puerto Rican and a Japanese woman who were citizens of the provisional government of the Republic of New Africa. Some people should know who Yuri Kochiyama is because person who was a friend of Malcolm, and Malcolm, when he was assassinated in the Audubon ballroom, Malcolm died in her lap. And all I'm saying is, by saying that is that we need to be very clear that the movement has comradeship, solidarity, and people who are hope to die about the movement. That's why I tell folks, you know, there are white folks who've been incarcerated as a result of their being a part of working with our movement underground, and they took leadership, hear me, took leadership from, you know, our New African heroes and heroes, our warriors, our freedom fighters. But what I always tell folks is the bottom line is, if we're going to have folks who are going to be working with us, we want them to be like John Brown. John Brown put his life and his family's life the line to defeat slavery. So I'm hoping, all I'm saying is this is the kind of information that they learn and share. And that is to say, I guess mention this right quick too. You know, primarily because you had talked about Camp Luzico and the survival thing, and I think I'll say this right quick. Our first camp was in Alabama in 1994. Everybody was in tents, and all the meals were cooked open fire. We're not doing that right now. We've changed it based on logistics and sites being able to meet our needs. But one of the things that all of our young people learn is what the acronym survival means. Yeah, that's SURVIVAL. That's spelled survival. What does the S stand for? It means size up the situation in total. Only because of time, I'm not going to go into a whole lot of detail, but you can sort of read between the lines. The next, the U stands for undue haste makes waste. The R stands for remember where you are. V stands for vanquish fear and panic. I stands for improvise. V stands for value living. A stands for act like the natives. L is learn basic skills. I mean, like I said, there's a lot of lessons and experiences that can go into just that. But one of the things I've shared with folks more recently was I keep telling folks, the environment is going to share with you whatever it is you need, whatever it is that you need. Even though we realize a lot of us live in urban communities in 1978, 79 in Mississippi, when Ku Klux Klan was strong, guns brazen everywhere. I made a presentation at Oxford, Mississippi, for the National Neighborhood Legal Assistance Foundation. I did my presentation, and I was working with the United League of Northern Mississippi under leadership of Skip Robinson and we had an anti-Klan rally, all right? So we drove from, in school buses, old school buses, from Oxford, Mississippi to Tupelo, Mississippi. Dealt with the rally. There are a number of pictures, and you can Google it or whatever and talk about, you know, the Klan rallies, Klan rallies at that time. But the lesson I wanted to get to, these two lessons I want to get to is this. We were riding back, and I have to say I was pleased, in the dark, I was pleased that the Reverend who was driving the school bus, his name was Pritchard, Reverend Pritchard. The van started to shake, and I said, Reverend Pritchard, you need to slow this down. Something ain't right. Something ain't right. He stopped. I got out of the school bus and got underneath, hit my lighter, looked underneath and all that, and I said, somebody has tampered with the steering rods and mechanism. So obviously, had we been going fast, we'd be in the ditch, very vulnerable. What I did was I said, it took me about 10 minutes to scurry around in the dark to be able to find a coat hanger. I was able, with the coat hangers, able to jerry-rig the steering rods and mechanisms to enable us to get safely to Oxford, Mississippi. But here's, so all I'm saying is you saw where that I was improvised, all right? Even though the other things that we can do is improvise. But the other lesson was I told folks who are part of the United League of Northern Mississippi, y'all slipped it. Y'all should have had security on our transportation. I mean, so that's a real, you know, very real situation. But there are other situations in terms of, you know, what our ancestors did. They didn't have a broom. You know, they had a tree branch or whatever. All I'm saying is that we need to understand that whatever it is, tools that we're using right now today, is built on a basic concept. When I'm dealing with survival, right. I own GPS. I'm not on the GPS on the telephone. I'm talking about a real live instrument that you use when you're backpacking or using it in doing marine work, you know. But I tell folks, if you can't get the satellite, what you going to do? If your battery runs out, what you going to do? Well, bottom line is you got a magnetic compass. Bottom line is, you still got star constellation. Bottom line is you still know where the sun rises and sun sets. I'm saying we have to deal with basics. You know, we talk about water purification.
Yes, sir.
We know that Michigan had some water issues. How could they could have resolved some of the stuff? We in metropolitan Atlanta have had water issues and things like that. How do you purify the water? And if the water's cut off, are you going to use some of the toilet water, you know, in the toilet bowl or anything like that? And we all need to realize it's the same water source that's coming into your sink. All I'm saying is there are loads of lessons and things that we need to learn relative to survival, and I still articulate the position that what we do out here in the sort of environment for camping and having none of those amenities is simply this. Every application we learn here has an urban application. So I'm going to stop and let you chit-chat and ask me, given a limited amount of time, what's what. You still there?
Yes, sir. I'm still here. You know, what I was going to say, we got like 7 minutes left, right? I want to ask you another question, then. I want you to give me your final thoughts, right? Okay. If an individual is interested in joining Camp Fuziku, what's the process of getting involved?
Camp Fuziku is a national camp. I would say that all they got to do is go to our website for our 501(c)(3), and that would be www.cadnationalcad.org, cadnational.org. And you'll see the programs that the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement and New African People's Organization sponsors. And you'll see some of the pictures over the years and some of the pictures from some of our recent camping experiences, but you'll also see some other stuff. They want to see the work of the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement. I got to say, shame on me. I can't remember. I think it's MXD Free the Land, but all I'm saying is if you put in Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, it should refer you to our website where we have copies of our journal by any means necessary and some of the positions that we take on some of the things that are happening internationally and nationally and locally in terms of solidarity statements and positions and things of that nature.
Okay. Okay, I appreciate that. You know, no, we got like 5 minutes left, right? What are your final thoughts you want to leave us with? What are your final thoughts you want to leave us with?
The final thought is we have to develop our movements and understand that we have to have a long end game. This is a protracted New African People's War. We need to keep in our consciousness and articulate the necessity of self-determination and sovereignty for African people, not only in the Black Belt South, what we call New Africa, but wherever we are in any of these cities or states in the empire. You know what I said, empire. I use the term very purposely, but I want to say this. We have to do that and work with people wherever African people want to. I'm saying there's an aspect to New African independence. That aspect is Pan-Africanism and internationalism. We have to understand that imperialism and white supremacy, I don't care if it's coming from the United States or Russia or Ukraine or any place, imperialism has to be defeated, period, because you can have a, quote, free New Africa and be vulnerable because these white supremacists who also, like I said, you can't separate patriarchy, which means we have to create societies that are egalitarian, that are fair and balanced. And then if we study history, we can find some of those. So what I'm saying is that just like Cuba is not safe and is vulnerable, Venezuela is not safe and vulnerable, Colombia is not safe given its new leadership, Ecuador is not clean and safe, and many of the African nations, if you will. All I'm saying is, we have to develop a consciousness that says we want to see equity, not equality, but equity in the world, which means we got to support reparations too. So all I'm saying is that we have to not only talk the talk, we got to walk the walk and make certain that we are learning new strategies to build critical mass, because we're not going to go anywhere unless we have critical mass. Because the world or the systems of domination control the economic market. They control the technological market, the military industrial complex. They have a lot to control. And we have to find every fissure that we can to disrupt their power. Every fissure to disrupt their power. And if we continue to do that, then our victory in terms of liberation, independence, and sovereignty will be something that we also have to strategize to be able to maintain that. Because we've had empires before, African empires, but they fall. But have we studied why they fell? And that is to say that we have to recognize that every empire has strengths and weaknesses, and we have to find the best formation to be able to respect the human dignity of who we are. So I hope that answers your question.
Okay, yes, it does. I appreciate that, Barbara. Again, I want to thank you for coming to our broadcast so you know you understand. I'm thankful for taking our time with your busy schedule. As you say, you're currently doing the work right now. You're at the camp. You know,
yes.
I want to say my greetings, our friend and lands, all the individuals participating in the camp, from the youth to the elders, to the people my age. And
right.
And I just want to thank you for the work you've been contributing right over the years, you know what I'm saying? And I'll let everybody know that but we have a Facebook page called Georgia University, an Instagram page, and a Twitter page called Georgia University. And if anybody want to get in contact with Georgia University, they can get in contact with me by sending me an email. My email is bumansecure80@gmail.com, which is bumanishakur80@gmail.com. Long live the resistance. Long live the African independent movement. Free to land.
Free to land.
Body be necessary, Bob. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's up.